Well, I think I'll just go ahead then and call the meeting to order of Tuesday, May 27th, 2014, the City of Goleta Design Review Board, and ask for a roll call, please.
Member Branch? Member Carroll? Member Hyman?
Present.
Member Shaler? Member Smith?
Here.
Vice Chair Schneider?
Here.
Chair Wignott?
Here. Thank you. Before we proceed, I'd like to ask you to stand and join me in Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. We'll go then to our administrative agenda. Item B1, meeting minutes for May 13th, 2014. And we have a motion for approval.
I move.
And a second?
I'll second that motion.
All right. Discussion? I just noticed one edit in the board members present under item A. It looked like on my copy there was a there was an error, and I have some members' names repeated, so you've taken care of that, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any other comments. Does any other member have comments? Okay, so we'll would the members then take action on the motion by signifying with an aye for approval?
Aye.
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 And I will be abstaining as I was not in attendance.
And we have the full board present except for Member Carroll, who has had a conflict of interest with another meeting and is unable to attend our meeting. So then we'll go on to item B2, the Planning Director report. Mary?
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chair, board members, and I'm covering for Shine today. He's out of the office. So just a few items of interest that are going to Planning Commission. June 2nd, there will be a meeting to look at the housing element. And then June 9th, there will be a meeting at the Planning Commission for Module 3 of the Zoning Ordinance Update. And also, the Climate Action Plan has been released for public comments, and that is posted on projectgoleta.com, and it will be going to the Planning Commission on June 23rd. So they're going to have a busy month. And if you'd like to check these out, they will be posted on the website about a week before the meeting dates. And that's all I have right now.
All right. We'll go on then to item C, review of agenda and projected agenda. Are there any changes in our agenda?
No changes. You'll have a meeting June 10th, your regular meeting, and a light agenda. We have a Westar overall sign plan, so we'll just bring that to the full board.
Okay, thank you. Then item D, public comment. At this time, the public shall have an opportunity to comment on any non-agenda item relevant to the jurisdiction of the city. Is there anyone that would like to comment at this time? Seeing no one, we'll then go on to our sign calendar, item E. And Madam Secretary, would you read the first item, E1, please?
Item E1 on the sign calendar is located at 6740 Cortona Drive. It's the 6740 Cortona Drive overall sign plan amendment, case number 14-040-DRB.
Just some short comments. Today we have a request for a conceptual preliminary review of proposed amendment to the 6740 Cortona overall sign plan. The applicant is proposing to make two changes. The first, increase the maximum letter height by 6 inches from 12 to 18 inches. And the second is to only require signs that deviate from the approved overall sign plan to be reviewed by the Design Review Board. And as mentioned in the staff report, the staff supports the amendment to the procedures as it brings it into alignment with other recently adopted and approved overall sign plans. And then I'll now hand it over to the applicant if they have anything to add. And if not, then I'm here for questions.
Okay. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Chris Cottrell, architect with Thompson Naylor Architects.
James Blair with Thompson Naylor Architects also.
Welcome.
So the proposal we have, we're in the tech park just a little bit west of here. And all the neighboring buildings have really large signs. Do you guys have you guys seen the photo packet?
No. I don't believe we have.
No, we haven't.
Okay. I mean, you can quickly flip through there, but you can see some of the other neighboring buildings, their signs or their letterings, you know, 3 feet, 4 feet. And so our clients are trying to just make their sign a little bit bigger. It's a really large building, so just trying to fit the lettering a little bit more to the scale of the property.
Okay. So, I had a quick question. I was looking at the photographs, so I was trying to listen, but these are surrounding other buildings in the general area.
Yes.
Correct? Okay.
And currently you just have the one client that...
Yes, the client is the owner of the building, owner of the property.
Which is?
CMC Rescue.
Okay. And do you have a picture of the current sign that's on the...
They don't have a current sign. They're new to
the
sign. Building.
Okay.
There's a photo sim on there of the proposed sign. And that's at 18 inches.
Yeah, so the bottom image there, and that's the proposed sign and the size that they're proposing with 18-inch lettering.
Okay, so...
So you can see it's still very small on the...
To the right of this, so out of the photo, the other end of the building, is there another client in there now that's logged something?
Yeah, there's another tenant in that end.
So do you have a photo of that sign?
I don't
see it.
I don't know, no.
Okay, because it seems like that is quite small. And so does that fall under the current sign plan for the building? Yeah.
Both of them, yeah.
All right. Questions from members?
I had a question. The way that because it's just CMC Rescue, it seems rather petite signage and not as big as some of the other signages that you've shown. What if a new company comes in and wants signage and they've got an extremely long name and large logo? Would opening up the sign plan allow for something that would be much, much larger visually than what you're proposing?
There's still the 40 square foot limit in the existing OSP, so the square footage would still be limited, and so they wouldn't, you know, you'd still have that.
And what is the square footage of the one that's being proposed?
I don't know. I have it on the plan. And
we have that.
8 square feet. Okay, 8.3. So it's
substantially smaller than what would be
the potential, yeah.
You know, is the board okay with what would be permissible? Because I don't know if this changes anything, but it sounds as if that would be permissible.
Yeah. Well, there's an existing OSP in place that allows for them to be 40 square feet, and all they're doing is requesting that the maximum font size be increased from 12 inches to 18 inches. So they're not really asking to change the allowable area.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thanks for explaining that.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Comments from members? Scott, do you want to start?
Mr. Chair, can I interrupt?
Oh, yes.
Could we have the board members indicate whether a site visit and ex parte took place?
Yes.
I have not visited this site or this specifically, but I'm very familiar with Cortona, so.
I'm in the same category as Scott. I'm familiar with the area, but I did not specifically go out there this time, but and had no ex parte conversations.
I visited the site, had no ex parte conversations.
I visited the site earlier today, no ex parte.
And I'm familiar with the site, no ex parte.
I did not visit the site. I am familiar as well, and no ex parte conversations.
Okay, thank you. So then let's go to Scott for comments.
Yeah, I think this is completely appropriate and fits within the context of the business park, and I could easily support this.
Same here, I support this.
Carl?
Yeah, I have no problem with it.
Gregory?
I also agree with my colleagues. I support it. Yeah.
Yes.
Support.
Okay, you have to be on tape. So
I support this.
Thank you. likewise, I do agree that this is a modest change to increase the height from 12 to 18 inches. The other part of the amendment, if you have signs that conform to the OSP, you're not coming, and you want to change them, like if you have a new client, then they don't necessarily have to come back to the design review board as long as the new client sign meets the provisions of the OSP. Yeah. And that's a new amendment to the existing or the current OSP.
Yes, the current OSP requires everybody to come back.
Right. And so, as you say, that puts it in to a similar situation. I mean, adding this second change, then it makes it very similar to OSPs that we have elsewhere.
Yes.
Okay.
Some of the more recently amended.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I mean, I'm okay with it. And I'm pleased to see that there is a section on prohibited signs. Mm-hmm. My problem is in the administration or monitoring of what goes on at various sites, and I'm not pointing fingers at these gentlemen, and because I think in this area there is not a trend to put in temporary or banner signs or something as we're seeing elsewhere, so I'm okay with it. I think that the enforcement of the prohibited sign section could be a little more strongly administered elsewhere in the city, and maybe that'll come in due course. But I do support what's being proposed today. So,
Chair, I look at my notes. I did have one more comment or question here. I appreciate that. Just a personal issue of mine regarding signage. I have no idea how the other board members might feel, but it just seems I've seen an increased use of that vibrant LED signage in the community. And it would, if it becomes the kind of signage that becomes the preferred kind of signage, I think it will have some adverse impacts on our community. Is there anything in the overall sign plan for this that talks about what kind of, if that kind of LED signage would be acceptable or prohibited?
I'm not sure which.
The language in the current OSP under tenant signage, item number 7,
mm-hmm.
calls for backlit, halo lit lighting, lettering is acceptable, or wall mounted light fixtures which direct the lighting downward toward the sign is also acceptable. Doesn't address LEDs specifically. Obviously,
that was my concern.
We could do that if we wanted to, I think. I mean, basically, we're here. It opens up the whole sign program, so we could add that if we wanted to.
I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry. It does have a prohibited sign section, and it prohibits in sections 4, light bulb, strings, or exposed tubing is prohibited, so we wouldn't see direct lighting. I think this sign program is shooting for backlit signs only, so we couldn't do that LED lighting you were talking about with that prohibition.
So light bulb strings or exposed tubing is prohibited refers to LED lighting?
Well, I believe the intent that I took from this, and excuse me if I've got it wrong, is that they are trying to prevent any, let's see, it only allows backlit or halo lighting. So I would, and maybe you can jump in on this, I would assume if someone proposed something that was not backlit or halo lit, that would be denied.
Or would be seen within the overall sign plan, and the staff would just go ahead and make a ministerial decision to approve it.
All right.
Which is what you want to avoid.
Well, I personally do.
Yeah. And do you have an example of where bigger, this is?
It's more for the signage on companies that are displaying cost of their product. And I don't know whether there'll be a proliferation of this. I don't know if it's something that's raising an
issue.
Like
that's gas station, sure, with the price for gasoline in LED lettering, red LED lettering.
I understand your point, but I think in this case, for what's proposed in front of us, it precludes seeing any light bulb at all. And so if somebody comes and proposes an LED light where you would see that, by nature of this, it would have to go to the board.
Okay, so that's covered within
that language. Because it doesn't comply with the OSP.
It actually explains it two different ways in two different locations.
So I think we're covered from, as a board, from that standpoint. It's either going to be backlit or it's got to come to the board.
Okay, yeah. That's covered.
As I understand it.
So if you wanted to strengthen that language by adding, these are the only lighting options allowed.
I'm not that familiar with lighting options, so as I read that, I didn't connotate bulbs with LED lighting.
Yeah, I think the inference is that, you know, any illumination, whether it's LED or to incandescent, I mean, it's got to be facing away from the sign, so it's backlit or shining directly on the sign, which means it's not shining at the view in the eyes of the person viewing the sign, as I interpret it.
It needs to be very clear so that a staff person doesn't interpret it a different way and a sign's put up and people later on say, who looked at that?
They have it defined the same thing two different ways to make it stronger.
Okay.
Because it says that under Article 3, Tenant Signage Number 7, it talks about the backlit. And then under prohibited signage, it goes again and it says on 5, no internally illuminated signs are permitted. Pan-channel backlighted signs, which is again saying what it says in 7, are permitted. So they're
redundancy.
Yeah, there's a redundancy in there that's built into this already to reinforce that.
Thank you for letting me discuss that.
Sure.
All right. So I think we're at the point in the item where we could move. Would someone like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion for approval.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you. So we'll go next to item F on the final calendar. Madam Secretary, if you'd like to read item F1, please.
Item F1 is the Sansum parking lot improvements located at 89 South Patterson Avenue, case number 13-144 DRB.
And I guess we will do declarations on site visits and ex parte conversations, please. Scott, would you like to start that?
I haven't visited since last time, and I've had no conversations with the applicant.
Same here for this one as well.
Same. No current site visit and no ex parte.
Okay. Yes, same with me. No current site visit and no ex parte conversations.
Haven't visited since the last time and no ex parte.
And likewise for me. So, Brian, do you have a staff report for us?
Yes, very briefly. Just going over real quick the motion from last time. The board had wanted to see, they had six separate comments. I've placed a little handout in front of you on what those were. So they include, just to get them in on the record for clarity, the board wanted the applicant to study the use of the half-diamond landscaped areas adjacent to the parking stops as additional landscaping areas. The building light fixtures and pole light fixtures need to correspond with the building colors. The board wanted the applicant to study the placement of lighting standards relative to tree locations. Also to study increasing the amount of permeable paving, the addition of a filter on the catchment basin on the southeast corner of the existing parking lot, and to study providing a small break area for the employees.
Okay.
I'm a little bit slow on this. I should have indicated that this was business that was being conducted with also the Metropolitan Transit District. I sit on their board of directors, and this could be potentially seen as a conflict of interest. I have not discussed this with MTD and have recused myself there. I will recuse myself once again. So
okay.
When this is done, I'll be back for whatever's left.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you. All right. So,
unless there's any questions for staff, I can
turn it over to the applicant, and
they can present the how they addressed the comments.
Right. And Francis, could you introduce your team again for the record, please?
My name is Francis Rachopi, Design Studios Collaborative. My left is Wes Barber from Flowers and Associates Engineering. We have Robert Adams from
Landscape Architect.
Yes. And representing Sansom, we have Mike Dale.
Welcome.
Facilities Manager.
Yes. All right. So probably the easiest thing to do would be just to run through the list show us what has changed since we were here last time.
It appears on, so we coordinated the plan, so it appears on several plans, but going with the first item, we did take the recommendation of increasing the, creating the diamond areas.
Yes. What sheet are you on?
In the west parking lot. We could start with L3.
L3. Okay with that.
So we introduced the diamonds along the western boundary, along the fence line, and we also introduced them against the building line. You can see that we've added approximately six different areas.
Any questions from board members on that one? No. Okay.
On item number two, the light fixtures, on page, on sheet A0, we've added the indication, actually added the light fixture to the page and added the finish being powder coat gray as well as the powder coat gray on the parking pole. Or light pole. And the sheet I candid out last time had the head, and the head is also gray. It didn't make it on the sheet, but you have it from the previous.
Right.
And we'll add it to the construction documents. So it's all in one place. Are you okay with that? And again, just to reiterate, that these are all cut, basically referring to cut off wall, and also the pole lights were cut off.
Right. So they're dark sky compatible fixtures.
That's the word I was going to get. Dark sky.
Okay. All right. So that's addressing the second comment.
Number three refers to the light pole and the positioning of the lighting.
You're going to go back to L3 for that, or?
It's actually more apparent on a combination of L3 and a combination of A2.
Okay.
And the intent on the west parking lot is to keep the trees behind the poles. We probably have some room to bring the pole standard forward a little bit more on that plant on the planting island, which we will take care of. On the east side parking lot, in the areas that they appear, there are no existing trees, and I do have a photograph of that parking lot. So it appears in three different areas on the east side, and each of those islands is devoid of any trees.
Three, okay. And then L3, just to look at the new landscaping. So, yeah, so the trees will be behind the poles?
Behind the poles.
Okay.
Yes.
And the tree that's going in there is what?
That's the Tristania.
Tristania. So height-wise?
We're thinking 35 feet on that.
So it will tend eventually to be above the height of the poles?
We're at 16 with the
yeah.
light.
Okay.
Full clearance for that.
Any question or comment there from board members? No. Okay. So then I think we're on to item four.
Item four was the increase in the permeable paving. And we can see that best on C1.
C1.
Our initial presentation showed the center on the west side. We had it only between the two islands. Two planting islands, we've increased it to the entire west side.
Very good.
Item number four.
Yeah, that was four.
Item number five was adding the filter to the catch basin. Again, that appears on C1. It is tagged as number 31.
31, right. And is that, I mean, is that just a something that goes across the mouth of the existing drop inlet?
It's a more significant.
That's actually a drainage inlet catch basin filter.
It
fits into the drainage basin itself, and it has a couple of different size of screens as well as a hydrocarbon absorbent boom installed into it.
Okay. And so then the maintenance people would periodically go in and clear that. I mean, and it's not a, I mean, what's the expected life of the thing, I guess you could say?
The expected life is, you know, 25 years.
Right.
Yeah. So it's constructed, but the maintenance itself would be, you know, basically annually and, you know, after heavy rain events.
Right. Okay. Questions or comments there? Gregory?
My comment would just be to, in the maintenance contract, to make sure that is covered, that it's known, that because it could very easily get left out. Just to make sure to make
yes.
it, as well as the catch basins on the west side, the trench inlet. Yeah, exactly. The filter's there. So,
and we prepared with Sam's help a maintenance plan that described.
I think what we'll probably end up doing is.
Can you use the microphone, please?
We'll probably make that scope of work part of our landscape maintenance contract with the third party that does the work.
Okay. Sounds good.
And moving ahead to item number six, the small break area. We can best see that on L3 again.
Right.
And we do have some additional details on L4.
Right. On the gabion baskets.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we've introduced a gabion wall at two foot in height. to create some kind of enclosure. At the same time, create some kind of security given the traffic moving through that driveway area. We've added the surface being decomposed granite. We've also added an idea of some wood slats on top of the gabion wall on the two corners for seating, for additional seating. And added, introduced the landscape and secondary entrance a little more prominent than it was in the initial design. And adding, the intent was also to create a buffer between that and the warehouse area.
How will that break area be accessed by people in the building?
Accessed along their walkway.
Okay.
That's been introduced, and only from that area, not
and
from the outside.
The doors are at what location for that?
The door is, the secondary door is right to the east of the
okay.
break area, and then the primary door is actually right on the west side in front of that tree. You can't quite see it in the plan, but okay. the main door is right there behind that planting island.
Okay.
It was the original island there.
Any questions or comments on that? I, I actually was quite pleased to see the use of a gabion in this way. I mean, I'm more familiar with them in civil engineering works, like protecting bridge abutments or some stream bank stabilization or something.
Trying to bridge this industrial look,
yeah,
and try to introduce at least elements that, as we expand the renovations in time, we might use this as a part of our language.
Yeah, it's quite a unique idea, I think. Question I had was, how is the top attached physically to that basket? I mean, what's the mechanism to hold it?
Essentially, it's just sanded lumber and stained, of course, and it's attached through the middle of the basket so it's secure. And again, the benches only occur on the corners.
Right.
So that's attached through the basket, and you won't see that attachment, but attached right through the basket to the bottom of the cage, you will.
Yeah.
So, and it's actually, there's actually some good examples of that. I have one graphic that's on sheet L4, but there's also photos and stuff, but that's a good shake, good fair representation of that bench top.
So the wood is being secured to the wire, the topmost wire, and then when that's
it's actually being secured down underneath through the stones.
Through the entire...
And into the bottom.
I see.
Yeah. So everything's secure. And then also we spec, sanded radius edges, so there's not,
someone can sit on it comfortably.
No splinters, things like that. But they only occur in the corner for kind of a conversation pit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're starting to see gabions used more as walls for projects, and I don't know if any of you have been to campground down in Costa Mesa, but it's a interesting use of gabion as a visual feature.
Hmm. The other thing that came to mind in looking at the location was sun during the day, and have you looked into that, and is that why the...
Speak a little bit about that. We introduced some shade trees.
Shade trees,
and
yeah.
We also have trees that are new to the site that we've added on the perimeter.
Okay.
Of course, though.
Yeah, we have some small olives there to help, kind of filter
shade
some of the
area.
Sunlight
yeah.
without making an overt statement. We also have to the west of this break area, we have a strawberry tree with a nice canopy on that. Yeah, not too big for the planter space.
Right. Okay, so any other questions or comments from members?
Yeah.
Gregory?
My experience of the dwarf olive is they get, if they're unpruned, maybe 6 feet max. I don't know what your experience is, but I question whether... I mean, this is the time to think about this, obviously, in terms of really providing a comfortable seating area with shade. That is, it's a really good point that Bob made, it is on the south facing, that's the hottest part, and you have the building behind it, which creates like a sun pocket. So I actually would recommend Though I love the dwarf olive, I think that they are, I don't think they're tall enough to really actually cool off.
Well, I said dwarf olive, but it could also be a multi-stem olive to keep at a pedestrian height.
There you go.
And that's the main point. So I'll be sure to take out the little ollie significance. I just didn't want that to overwhelm, but I was always thinking of a multi-stem olive, which really I want to be pruned to pedestrian height, a little bit taller maybe, but not a large tree to block traffic flow or anything like that. But I thought about, you know, Francis and I actually kind of imagined us sitting in there. What would we like? And I know Francis was so helpful in saying, how do we make this comfortable?
Excellent. Great. Thank you.
Any other comments? I think you've addressed our six comments from the last meeting quite adequately. I had thought that your break area was going to continue to be in that southwest corner. To see it shifted and expanded is very good. I think you still might have an issue with sun between 10 and 2, even with the shade where you're showing it. So down the road, if your budget allows it, maybe you'll look at putting some kind of trellis or shade structure there if it is a problem. Yeah, but I think it's a very good location compared to what you had previously.
Yeah, they were, you know, behind the cars in that corner, and actually there's a lot of construction that goes on with the site next door to us.
Yeah,
so
with
granite. We were trying to not to isolate it, but to integrate it in the flow of the building and the entrances. Yep. So.
Very good. Okay, any further comments or discussion? Well, I think we're ready for a motion then. Somebody like to make that? We're here for final on the final calendar.
I'll move to approve it as submitted, just with the comment that they clarify the olive tree.
Three species,
exactly.
Fruitless olive.
Yeah.
And I think there was also a
move the light poles
comment that you made
to verify that the light poles are in front of the trees on the west side.
And the construction documents are going to show the light pole fixture,
the head,
which is on Shepherd.
Right, which we saw before and we were comfortable with.
So with those
so amended.
Three comments, mm-hmm. All right, do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Approved, thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
Then we'll go on to item G on our conceptual / preliminary calendar. And Madam Secretary, would you read the first item, please?
Yes. Item G1 is AT&T Monopine co-location project located at 75 Elwood Station Road, case number 14-12-DRB.
And could we have declarations on site visits and ex parte conversations?
I've seen the site, but no conversations.
Same.
Did not visit the site and no ex parte conversations.
Site visit, no ex parte.
Site visit and no ex parte conversations. So we'll hear from our planner, Joe, please.
Okay, today we have a request for conceptual preliminary review. I propose cell tower co-location at 75 Elwood Station Road. The applicant is proposing to co-locate 12 new directional panel antennae on an existing monopine along with associated equipment. The existing monopine was approved via CUP and subsequent LUP in 2007. the existing monopine contains 6 antennae on 3 antenna arms, which extend out approximately 4 feet, with the branches at that height approximately 1 foot beyond the antenna. The proposed antenna would be mounted below the existing antennae and will extend out approximately 7.5 feet, with branches extending out approximately 7 to 8 feet. No increase in overall height or new branches are proposed. And the new equipment would be located in the northwest corner and surrounded by a chain link fence with privacy slats. And I'll now hand it over to the applicant if he has anything to add. And if not, I'm available for questions.
All right. Thank you. Would you introduce yourself,
yes,
please?
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Mark Myers. I'm with SureSight Consulting, representing AT&T Mobility. Thanks for having me today. As Joe mentioned, we're pretty simple co-location in this case. It was an existing approved monopine, or a cell tree disguised the monopine. And we're proposing to attach our antennas to this tree below the existing antennas around there. We're not adding any height or anything like that. And our equipment will be in the rear back corner of the property. The subject property is actually 75 Elwood Station. It's actually a Verizon telephone switch. It's a switching station. And the existing pole is already there, and Verizon already has their own facility there. So we're going to co-locate on the Verizon pole and put our equipment in the rear back corner. We did initially submit, and we got a couple of comments that we did address. So initially, we were asked to move out of the setback areas, as can be seen on the site plan. There's a 10-foot side and rear setback, I guess, in this particular case. So we were able to slide that down and accommodate those required setbacks so we do not encroach. In doing so, we actually reduced the size of the shelter. The equipment shelter in this case is much smaller. It's 11.5 by 12, but it still fits within the same area as what we proposed, and then we do have a backup generator as well. It's very consistent with what Verizon has done and other carriers as well. It's just different equipment, different carrier. As for the co-location on the pole, as mentioned before, we're going to mount our antennas at approximately 40 foot. It's about what they call the rad center, or the center line. So the antennas actually stand up a little bit higher than that and down further. But at that particular area of the pole, the branches extend out, as mentioned, about 6 to 7 feet. Our antennas will not extend out quite that far, so the branches will extend past that, giving a more realistic look. In addition, on these co-located or trees like this, to help them disguise so you don't see the direct view of the antennas, they paint them dark brown or dark green to match, and then they also cover them with pine needle socks, they call them, little things. They're like they're little covers with the foliage on them. So now, obviously, they're still going to be visible, but you don't have direct sight of the antennas themselves. So in this particular case, as mentioned before, you know, it's a simple choice. It's a co-location. Don't really have to do much to it. It's a Verizon switch. We're locating in the rear back area of the building. It's not even really used for anything else but storage. At that particular corner, there's an existing 8 to 10 foot high retaining wall, a block wall, and then on top of that, a chain link fence. The adjacent properties are a cement factory and another industrial building, and then I think to the south there is a multifamily existing, but there are a number of existing trees around that area. I think there's only two in that corner that might have direct visibility past the building, but the site's been there. It's been there for years. So in this particular case, as mentioned, it's pretty straightforward. Typically, when wireless facilities come out, the first choice we go to, as most jurisdictions encourage you to, is a co-location. It minimizes new vertical elements in the vicinity. As you're probably looking at the photo sims there, there's another one right behind on a different property,
right,
that's there. So that could have been that was obviously another choice as well, because that could work. However, in this particular case, that would have had an impact on the parking that's there. Where we're going now, it doesn't really have a direct impact. It's not used by the public. It's only for storage, et cetera, at the switch.
Right.
So if we were co-located over there, there could have been bigger complications. It probably would have had a little bit more of an impact on the existing use as opposed to where we're going now. And finally, as mentioned before, our equipment is in the back rear corner. The chain link fence and wall that fully enclose it is screened as well, but we've gone the extra length and agreed to provide slats that fully screen that from any further view should the gate, the perimeter gate, be open. So with that, I don't know the next step, but hopefully I respectfully request your reapproval to move forward with this.
We'll have some questions and some comments.
Thank you.
And you can answer them, I guess. So questions of the applicant by members? Scott? No? Tom? Carl?
The image on sheet 8.3, the existing antennas that are at the top of the tree are significantly shorter than what you're proposing. Can you tell me why that is?
Well, yes, I can, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. In this particular case, obviously the first thing is it's a different carrier. It's different technology, it's their choice to use whatever equipment they choose to. In this particular case, I can't speak for them, it's Verizon. They may not have done their LTE upgrades, which is sort of what is taking place with this co-location. Anywhere there's an existing site that AT&T is working on, they're doing their LTE upgrades. So they're utilizing different equipment that's been on, that we've been accustomed to, if you will, on the towers, which in some cases are longer antennas. And then also they have what they call RRUs, remote radio units, that they move up behind the antennas. So in this particular case, we are longer, but look for them, Verizon, to come very soon.
Do the same thing.
And the existing branches that are there are going to be able to remain and fit between the new antenna?
Yes, actually, I brought the structural, but the structural analysis, when it's initially completed, allows for co-location. And what they look at is the first one, of course, and then any future ones, and then taking into account the weight and the load, the wind sail for those proposed antennas in the future, as well as the branch count and what's out there as well. So, yes. Sorry, I didn't answer.
That's all I have.
Okay. Any questions, Gregory? Or
no questions, no comments.
Yes, I had, I think, two questions. I'm on sheet A-2. And I'm looking at your utility area out there, and just looking at these parking spaces that are running along the west side, and wondering if this parking space will be in the way of the ingress and egress to your gates and facility there, or whether there's enough clearance there if a car is parked there to do whatever needs to be done in that spot.
We may answer that. Mr. Chairman, members of the board. In this particular case, to accommodate for the setbacks, we actually slid everything down and get a little bit closer. Those are only going to be open in cases where they do occasional maintenance, I think twice a year on the HVAC units. And as mentioned before, this is probably what was originally proposed in terms of parking. It's not even accessible to the public or used by the switch other than for storage.
Right.
So I was just out there, just to drive by again. I don't even think you can see most of the striping and stuff there, because they kind of use it as their storage area where they have trailers or temporary cows parked. In this particular case, as mentioned before, it wouldn't be difficult to get them to move something should that happen. But
go ahead.
Bill, can I just tack on to that? I guess that makes me wonder. I know the building's being used for storage, so it's not really using parking, but there still would be a zoning code requirement for parking based upon the size of the building. Has anybody looked at that?
Well, the number of parking spaces in this district and in this for this use would be based on the number of employees. And since the building doesn't really have any employees, the parking was originally there. Possibly for previous years.
Okay.
Also, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if you look at the site plan that's there, there is a bunch of parking in the front of the building. This back part is just fenced off. That's what I was saying. Most people, if I went there to visit, I drove in, I parked in there and looked through the vents, you know, so everybody got to go to the door. So they're not going to let you in back.
Normally, it's not in use for,
exactly,
for parking,
yeah,
by
not
employees
even
or.
There.
Yeah.
You're right.
Right.
Yeah. So there's only two cars in front when I was there, just an hour ago. So.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Thanks. And the second one, this idea of co-location, that's good long-term planning, so it's good to see the existing facility being used by more than one entity. It's You're indicating that you're going to be installing a backup diesel generator?
That's correct.
Does Verizon also have a diesel generator?
They do.
So is there some reason that those can't be used simultaneously in the event of a disaster that would probably cut off electricity for both entities at the same time versus to have two doing the same thing?
Possible, yes. Probable, you know, likelihood of two giant entities sharing.
Okay.
You know, no. I mean, in any instance, like, they'll always try to share and co-locate and utilize stuff, but when they can ever always put their own equipment, they want responsibility for their own, just because they're held to the federal standards, FCC guidelines and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So for E911 and stuff to stay intact, they're starting to do it. Verizon's kind of always done it. They've had the jump on things with many of them because they automatically put generators at their sites, and they've been doing it for years. But nobody else does. What they usually do is they'll put a plug there so you can bring one out. But you have to react. So which one do you go to? You know, you got to bring temporary trailers out to all these sites. Well, now their new policy is every site they want to generate same way. So, yes, is it possible? Absolutely. I'm guessing in most cases because this is a switch, because of where it's at, they would say no. It's just they kind of get personal on their stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to explain in the business world, but they just said if you want to co-locate, do your own thing.
Okay.
So I agree with you. It seems like they should be able to share more things. People ask all the time about antennas and stuff, and it's like they can't really do it. Right. They don't want their own.
So essentially, they're just sharing the pole, and then every other bit of equipment is specific to the to one company.
Absolutely.
Or the other.
Yeah. Right down to the meter.
Right.
Sure.
I'm hoping we can. I guess that makes me think of putting in limitations on hours of operation because these generators from time to time get to be tested ever so often, right?
Yeah, they come out, I think, quarterly is how it does. They come out and do just a maintenance
check on
it.
Is there some way we can put a condition of approval that the tests and happen only during daylight hours? That'll probably happen automatically,
yeah,
but I understand that. But
I think it might come with Verizon, which is...
It wouldn't surprise me if it's not.
That's standard.
During business hours, normal business hours, the generator tests would occur rather than on the weekend
yes.
or at night.
Right.
Or
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So is that's a condition that we can... that's a condition that we can add to our approval of this installation?
I know the original CUP has some conditions on it. I'm not mm-hmm. sure if that's one of the conditions, but that would be the thing that kind of oversees the use of the site in terms of hours.
Yeah.
There is performance standards for that district, which outlines noise levels that are permissible. So the generator would have to conform to those standards.
Yeah. All right. Other questions? Mark, you mentioned that you were going to be adding slats to the chain link fence that is surrounding the shelter and the portable generator site, and that's going to be on the south and east. I mean, the fencing is just on two sides. And what color are the slats proposed to be?
We're open. I think the front gates are brown. the ones at the front gate.
The front access gate.
I'm sorry,
of the complex.
It's hard to see you this far.
Okay.
We can make
so
many colors.
Can we say that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think we just say that you would commit to matching the existing.
We're happy to do
slats.
So.
And are they also on the existing Verizon enclosure, do you know?
No, they are not. There actually is no fence around that.
There's no fence around
that. It's very
that
hard, so
I see. Okay.
They feel okay with
But they're requiring that you put, or you, for security, you want to have a fence.
Yeah, they always like
call.
To have it separated,
yeah.
Like I said, just one way or another.
Okay.
So, yes, it's just for that. And then staff actually asks for the screen.
Right. And are you familiar with the monopole that's on the adjacent property? That you go through the Citrix parking lot to get to.
Stuff, yeah, that's T-Mobile.
Do you know
tree?
That's a T-Mobile? And it's number 8 in our packet. There's a picture of the existing and proposed location. And What I'm seeing on that adjacent monopole is in fact the pine socks that you were talking about up in the top that's currently there. I mean, is it a similar sort of design?
Yeah, I mean, you can see the antenna.
Oh, I understand that.
You can't see them, you can see the outline.
Right.
Yeah, they're colored.
Right. Yeah, I mean, as far as things being visible, I mean, in that picture, if you look immediately to the left, you can see some light poles and a high voltage line that's not the most aesthetically beautiful looking thing. So, yeah. Okay, and the only thing that I noted in looking at your existing proposed location was that the bottom branches on that monopole, there's several that are just kind of they put the branch and they didn't put a lot of needles. I mean, it looks like those things should be either removed or they should be finished off with more needles. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's like the three lower
believe
branches,
it or not,
maybe.
That's supposed to be part of the design. It's not, you know, they try so
like,
hard to look like a, you know, where some of them where they'll actually have a couple at the bottom where, you know, I've seen pine trees where the bottom few are just the branches.
Yeah. Well, I was comparing it to the monopole on the adjacent property, which is, you know, a smooth trunk until you get up to full branches. And and the one on that you're going to co-locate on, the bottom two or three branches are essentially bare.
Yeah.
And it just seemed...
It's just for a realistic look.
I mean, it doesn't look very...
It's not even visible. Nobody can see this unless you're standing inside that area.
Well, you can see it from the Citrix parking lot.
You'd be hard pressed. You'd have to get dirty. I climbed up.
Well, I drove there this morning and I could see it from my car.
Oh, from the very first point when you drive in.
From the Citrix parking lot, if you look at that pole. I'm just wondering why they would leave it like that.
The design. Yeah. Okay. That's probably the way they ordered it.
Okay. Well, that's the only comment I think that I had. Any questions or comments or further discussion from members?
I don't have any problem with this, and having spent this whole past 6 months maybe driving to LA every other weekend for my daughter's volleyball tournament, I've seen so many of these in LA, and these are the ones we have that this board has taken pains to go over. It far exceed anything I've seen in LA.
Yeah, these are good trees.
I mean, it's, you know, who are we kidding? You're hiding, you're trying to camouflage a cell tower, and so I get that. But to the extent that you can, these are relatively well done. I mean, the ones in LA, they're not even trying. They're like spray painted green and call it a day. You know, these have kind of random spacing, and the color's pretty decent. I don't have a problem with this at all.
Okay, I agree with you too. These are pretty good trees in comparison.
Yeah, I totally echo Scott's opinion. I'm good with this in this location like this.
Yeah, I'm fine. I just want to make sure we deal with the hours of operation for the diesel generator, and we specify matching the color of the slats to the existing.
Will do.
Gregory?
Yes, I support the project.
Bill?
I think it's outstanding, the location of these this installation, because of the fact that it's really not visible to very many people at all. If it were sited somewhere else where it had high visibility, I'd be more critical of that. It looks like, in my opinion, there's more foliage on the monopole on the adjacent one, and it looks more like a mature tree, where the one that's proposed looks much like a much less mature tree. There's kind of an unnatural look of the mid-level cluster, and then there's a lack of density, and then there's the existing antenna up there. But once again, due to the site, I mean, that's being utterly picky, and due to the site where this is located at, no one's going to have any complaints about this.
Yeah, I agree with my colleagues that what you're proposing is suitable for this location. I think if you're going to leave those bare branches at the base, you should hang a rope swing from them. otherwise, remove them. But that's just my individual call. But otherwise, I would support the motion with the comments that we made. And do we have a second for that motion? I thought you were moving. I'm sorry.
I can't. So,
okay.
So moved.
I'll move to approve as submitted with just the comments that the slats get pointed out and the hours of operation get clarified.
Slats to match existing color and hours of operation
to be clarified during normal business hours.
For testing the generator?
Yeah.
Any other comment to add to that motion? No? Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
All right. Motion and second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Carried unanimously. Thank you very much. Thank you. And that was for,
preliminary.
For yes. A preliminary approval. The motion will reflect that it's.
Yes, that was for preliminary.
Preliminary. And
that's to come back before the full board.
Do we want final on the consent calendar? Or
easily
to
enough,
come back
I think.
Final to come back on
I would say consent, no
on the
problem.
Consent
on
calendar, I think we're okay with that. And what date would you like to come back for the final approval? It's kind of a formality, but necessary.
As soon as possible. Anytime.
We've given you preliminary approval today. There's a 10-day appeal period that somebody could appeal what we've just done.
Okay.
And then you'll come back for final on consent, which means you meet with staff and one member of our board. You don't come back before the full board.
Oh.
And so that'll be on June 10th.
The next meeting's on June 10th. So.
Consent will be 2:45.
Oh, okay, no problem. Because I have another hearing that day, actually, in L.A. at 10. I should be able to.
All right, is the applicant required to be here for consent? It's not a bad idea, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but I'm just saying technically. That's great, because I'm actually in Orange County, so it's a long ride.
I guess that's a question for staff. I don't know. I'm asking.
I don't think they're required to unless there's something that comes up. It's in your best interest, but we can work that out and give you the option.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Sure. I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Final on consent. All right. We'll go next to item G2. And Madam Secretary, if you'd read the item, please.
Item G2 is the Tesla stationary battery storage located at 5956 Calariel, case number 14033DRB.
And do we could we have declarations and ex parte conversations, please?
I've seen the site, but no conversations.
Say that again.
Pardon me? I've been to the site, but no conversations.
Same.
I've been to the site, no conversations.
I made a site visit, no ex parte conversations.
Okay, I visited the site and no ex parte conversations. Right. Daryl?
Thank you, Ms. Gregory, and thank you, Board. This afternoon, we have Tesla here to propose battery storage units at Rabobank on Calariel. Essentially, what this is a battery storage unit that is there for peak energy demand at peak hours. So essentially, this is somewhat of a backup unit, and the tenant of the building has the option of using this energy when they want to. So right now we have the proposed location at an existing parking space on the eastern edge of the building. As you can see in the photos, there's currently an existing trash receptacle there. And they're requesting to put the concrete pad there as well as the unit. And then it directly behind that, adjacent in the landscaping, they're going to propose the disconnect unit there. Now, looking at the consistency with the general plan, right now we have a policy that all dumpsters have to be enclosed or screened or have a fence or wall around it. So that's one issue that we should take a look at. The second issue is that all equipment visible from the public right-of-way also needs to be screened. But essentially, this is units that will help, and we're seeing these more often now, units that will help in terms of peak energy demand. They're also used as possible backup generators and EV possible hookups. So with that, I want to introduce you to Karen McPherson, who's the agent for the applicant, and I'll hand it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did a great job. He's absolutely correct. It's a, we call it stationary storage because you're probably familiar with Tesla's supercharging station for the cars, but this is just stationary storage. So it's a bank of batteries with an inverter. So the unit, the intent is to have the unit charge itself up in the middle of the night when peak demand is lower, and then the bank would run off it during peak hours in the middle of the day. The reason that
it's not meant for charging cars, it's meant for the bank to run off of.
That is correct. This is not going to charge cars, it's just going to run the bank. So it's they're going to be able to use off-peak electricity, so that will save the entire grid because you're running on the battery backup during on-peak hours. So, but yes, it's not a supercharging station. That's why we call it stationary storage. I don't think that's completely clear, but that's how they do it in their car kind of lingo.
Well, the project, not to interrupt, but the project description was a little confusing then, because one of the things that it said it would do would aid in electrical vehicle charging was the third item. It said it was going to assist in reducing peak power demand, act as an emergency backup power station, and then aid in vehicle recharging.
Well, as you know, there's a charging station there.
Right.
So the charging station is running off the same power that the bank is running off of.
Okay.
So the charging station would be able to run off this if a car happens to come up and plugs in on peak hours.
Okay.
So it's giving, but that's not a Tesla supercharging station. It's
right.
Giving power to this site.
To the complex
yeah.
In general. Okay.
Yeah. But there isn't, a car can't come up and plug into this unit.
So, all right, sorry, getting ahead of myself.
So let's talk real quickly. Let me just tell you the location selection. The dumpster was existing there. We chose it there because the dumpster was existing there. The property owner says the dumpster selection was chosen because of the size of the site. That particular parking space is a little bit bigger than all of the other parking spaces. We need to have our unit in a relatively close proximity to the existing power panel on the building. The existing power panel on the building is kind of right across the driveway from this, so that's why that is good for us. Also, there is landscaping all across the back, so we figure that our unit, which is only about 3.5 by 3 feet width and depth, will be screened sufficiently. Now, if you have concerns about dumpster screening, that's something else that we'll have to talk about, because we were just looking at screening our stuff. And
and what were you proposing to?
We're screened by the stuff, the landscaping behind us, and by being behind the dumpster.
Oh, okay.
So we will be screened. The dumpster, however, is a different issue there. We could, however, because this is a larger parking space, we could extend. Do you see how there's kind of a finger that pokes out on the one next to it? We have enough room to slide that dumpster a little bit closer to that finger and put a finger over here with more landscaping on it.
Yeah, I think what the comment about the dumpster itself was most of the new projects that we're seeing, there's actually an enclosure that the dumpster goes into that screens it and protects. I mean, if someone leaves the covers open and it rains, I don't know when that's going to happen, but these things typically are covered and a covered walled enclosure, four-sided, with doors that are opened and the trash collection service brings the dumpster out and empties it and puts it back. So I guess that was the issue that staff is referring to, and the general plan is calling for that type of a structure.
We're thinking that, you know, additional landscaping might help the area more than a fence. We thought that would look better, but I guess you guys' call.
I mean, I don't know if you've been to the Fairview Shopping Center, for example, and Union Bank. Well, Union Bank has a dumpster, and it's enclosed. And the shopping center has some elsewhere. They're all enclosed, mm-hmm. For example. So, it seems like this is kind of the window of opportunity for the city, the design review board, to see that something similar might get installed here. Do board members have other questions? Scott, please.
As I understand it, you're... So your unit is really only about 3.5 feet square, but it's almost 8 feet high.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yes. And you're not proposing any sort of screening to that at all, or?
No, because we think the dumpster does an effective job in front of it. And the landscaping in the back certainly does. But we'd be happy to put additional landscaping, but if you don't feel that's effective,
so as you're, if I'm driving into the site, and I see this, and I see the dumpster, I will see your unit sticking up behind said dumpster, and I'll be looking essentially at, if I'm looking at page Z6, I'll be looking at that side, the side that's adjacent to the rear.
So,
if I understand correctly, that's what I'll see.
So one of the elevations on Z5, like elevation A on Z5 is what you're talking about there?
Okay. Right, exactly. Exactly. So from elevation A, what I'm seeing is the side elevation on Z6, the one that's next to the rear. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the adjacency. Okay, got it. Okay. Those are my questions.
So the one thing that we do need to do, and I don't think a fence would help us, is we need to have we need to have the bollards behind the dumpster in case the garbage man rams
right.
it.
Oh,
we
sure.
don't want him to. Sometimes that happens. So I'm not sure that we would. Maybe we could talk about a two-sided or a three-sided enclosure, maybe leaving the back open, because the back is effectively screened with the oleanders that are there right now.
Any question? Any other questions of the applicant?
I don't have any
questions.
Carl? I don't have any questions.
No questions.
Gregory? Bill?
I do have several questions.
Please, yeah.
This is, this unit would be operating 24/7, either providing electricity or storing electricity from the grid?
Yes, essentially.
Does this unit create any levels of sound when it's doing any of those functions?
It hardly makes any sound.
Some of the things that you're used to probably are like the cell sites where they've got the air conditioning units running. This doesn't have it. It's just a fan that works on that inverter. So it's really quite quiet.
Is it generating any heat?
It does have heat, yes.
And would any of that heat that's being exchanged to the air affect the plants that are situated right next to it?
No, they said we have plenty of space in between the plants.
Maybe this is a question then for staff. I guess this could be construed as a backup generator and the issue of a setback, and we just had a project where the backup generator was requested to be 10 feet from the setback. Is that germane to this situation? Can this generator be placed?
In the zoning district, it's a 5-foot side yard setback.
5-foot okay. setback, yeah.
So that makes sense.
So looking at it, it looks like they're going to meet those setbacks.
Okay.
I've seen them. Thank you.
And then is there trenching that will be needed in order to hook this up to the electrical circuitry of the building itself?
At this point, we believe we can bore. But you never quite know until you get under there and try and go across.
Okay.
We believe we'll be able to do boring. But there is a possibility of trenching if we run into something. We haven't had it marked yet.
Okay. And I'm not sure if this is an answer that is really, well, I'll just ask the question anyway. I'm surprised. This is an interesting project. I'm surprised that you're using enough peak hour electricity to justify this investment. Do you know what the return on investment is calculated for this?
No. I can tell you that we are doing this exact same project on about 26 Rabobanks. I don't know if they're looking at it as a whole for the bank. You know, maybe it's not individual branches, but they're looking at it as a big group.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they haven't given me any figures on return on investment. Sorry.
Okay. Well, thank you. That was all the questions that I had.
Yeah, I had some questions about reduction of peak demand and what duration of time would be involved, but I don't think it's germane to really what we have before us. I think the main issue for us seems to be the screening, not just of your proposed stationary storage battery, but also the dumpster. I mean, this seems to be the issue before us is how can we approve what you're proposing without requiring you to put up some kind of enclosure for the existing dumpster? It seemed like if you did that, all of your equipment is going to be would be behind that enclosure, and it would be screened by the enclosure and by the landscaping that's there. So, it seems like we sort of have to tie you into Rabobank. We have to tie Rabobank into committing to provide a covered trash enclosure as part of this application. Mm-hmm. Unless staff says otherwise, I think I'm reading your statement correctly.
Yeah, I think the DRB does have that purview. This is a unit, the storage unit does require, essentially what they're proposing is the trash receptacle screening this unit. And is that something that the DRB is okay with? And that's why we brought it here.
Yeah.
Well, question I had was, I'm assuming that since that dumpster is already there, that parking space removed is accounted for in the site overall parking.
So they're currently, in terms of the parking regulations, are mandated to have 22 parking spaces. So right now I think they have over 70. So they're definitely overparked.
They're close.
Very close.
Okay. Good. Good.
Are you going to, I'm sorry, are you going to give me additional direction as to,
Just a minute.
Great, thank you. Tell me which one.
All right, those are all my questions.
I think we're ready for comments now, so go ahead, Scott.
All right, well, I would like to see, this is the opportunity to have that dumpster screened. A typical enclosure for a dumpster, they're typically either made of CMU, or if they're you know, or if they're wood, there's a curb in there so that when those things slide in there, they bang against the curb and don't ruin the fences and that kind of thing. So so I would argue that that would be, now's the time to do that. And I would think that between that and potentially, you know, maybe a little bit of additional landscaping on just directly to the east of where that enclosure would be, that this new trash enclosure, it would screen your thing just fine. I wouldn't have any problems with your charging unit behind it. So that would be, those are my comments.
And we're talking about a covered enclosure, I mean, similar to what is at the Fairview Shopping
what
Center.
What the city requires, yeah.
Pretty much, yeah. So, Tom?
My comments run along the same, because right now, you got one thing that should be enclosed is trying to hide behind another thing that's supposed to be enclosed. They're like, you know, it's not really going to work. But one question, I didn't think about this in the question section. Typically, equipment has to have clearances around it for maintenance, for repair work, and usually there's like a favored direction that they want to have, and I'm not sure which direction that is. So if we did an enclosure in front of it for the dumpster, would that impact the ability to maintain the battery backup equipment?
This stuff we actually need to get all the way around. It's not that you just do maintenance on the front or you just do maintenance on the back or the sides.
As long as you meet these clearances that you've mapped out here.
Yeah. Okay. You got to get all the way around it.
No, I got it. Okay.
It's looking at the drawing, though, CMU wall does seem like, what are CMU walls?
Concrete block.
Yeah, I know
concrete
that. Are they 8 inches each concrete?
Yeah. So 8 by 16.
Usually. So that's a total of 16 that I got to take out of that parking space and the dumpster. I'm afraid that is making it tight.
You're coming forward. I mean, it seemed like you're going to have to move the
wall along here and a wall along here. You have no interest in chain link fence with slats because that's.
I think what we're talking about is a box around your existing dumpster with a roof on it and doors that open out.
Okay, and no way I could do some of those walls, especially on the sides, in chain link with slats.
Does the city
think you'd have to look at the city
standards? So if we read the general plan policy, it says currently all trash receptacles have to be screened by landscaping, fencing.
Okay.
So the option is there. It's up to the DRB.
I'd be okay with the fencing with slats. You know, maybe some additional landscaping on the outside. You know, that I'd be good with something like that. But they both need to be, you know, screened. I mean, certainly the trash receptacle. And as you say, once that's done, that's going to go a long way towards screening the equipment in the back, and maybe the rest being taken care of with planting. Maybe one of the fences that enclose the receptacle could get extended down one side. Yeah, pending, okay. but it needs something like that.
Okay, I guess I'm a little uncertain as to what the standard is, because I thought at previous meetings when we had the subject of trash enclosures that the city was requiring a covering. I mean, the structure that's screening the trash enclosures actually had to be covered. So is that not
it's not a general plan policy.
So where do we find that?
It is in the California Uniform Building Code that trash receptacles have to be a roof on.
Trash receptacles have to have a roof on them, but I mean, is the existing dumpster meeting that by having the lid that closes completely on top of it? I guess that's...
First, let me jump in here. First, it's not in the UBC, it's not in the code. It's a state stormwater quality issue to prevent rainwater from raining into the dumpster and then leaking out onto the ground and going out. Yes. So it is a requirement. However, in the past,
on existing projects, we have not necessarily gone to the extent of requiring that. So we do have some purview here.
Right. I know with
how far we go.
The restaurant that was on Kyriel, the
Rusty's.
No, the well, anyway, there was a project that came before us where we had an opportunity. It was the Fresco North, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think and we I ended up
we
with
just screened
this.
It without
was screened it with a wooden wall, I think was what we ended up with.
Well, that's why, I mean, that's why dumpsters come with the lids on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So. You know, we can put chain link over the roof and put slats in it. It's not the solid impervious roof that you're talking about, but if you... For some reason, want that back in the dentistry.
Well, I think you're saying is we're looking at an existing installation rather than a new project.
Yeah, right. My take is on it. I would like to get it screened. I think it's important to get both the dumpster screened and the new equipment screened in some fashion. I'm less worried about the roof on the dumpster issue. And I'm also wondering about just security or proximity, any kind of security fencing required around your equipment for safety purposes, just to keep kids that don't have anything better to do away from it. So I don't know if that's a requirement or not, but it might be something you want to consider.
Okay.
I think, just to be try to get to the point, I think if you extend that existing planter like you were starting to do, and you take that entire area, you could take that and work a place for a dumpster and your equipment in that area with decent landscape screening around it, and I think you'd have enough room to make it work. So that's where I'm at with it. And if need be, there's obviously enough parking. If that doesn't work, you could take in another parking space if we needed to. We're so over on parking that I think you've got enough flexibility there in area to make it work. So,
my question is actually for Carl. I just want to clarify, Carl, is what you were referring to basically to eliminate the need for any kind of wall?
No wall, no fence, but using landscaping for screening.
No,
or is that not right?
No,
I just want.
I would be up for a wall or a fence. Something. I don't want to rely on landscaping, even though we want landscaping in addition to that.
Got you.
To soften
okay.
it, I think we want a definite structure there to act as the screening mechanism.
Good. So my comment would be the same. My only concern is that if you have, if the 8 inches on either side is going to encroach on the accessibility, I don't know any planters that are less than 8 inches. You know, so how much room will we have for a landscape bed? So. To me, that would require to cut into the additional parking space, or I think that my opinion is that the chain link fence with slats is a bit industrial, that we should aim higher in terms of achieving a look that's beautiful for that parking lot as best we can. So I think that considering that we'd need at least, I would say, 16, 18 inches for a proper bed, on either both sides, I would think that a well-constructed wooden fence would do the trick. That could be probably the most attractive look. Another option, I suppose, for landscaping, if we want to go Olympian, it would be to trench around that fence and plant a two-dimensional vine, like a bougainvillea or something that doesn't need, it's not a shrub. It's to keep something two-dimensional, to have some plant, some foliage alongside that fence. That would be the most attractive. So those are the two proposals that I would make.
I just want to throw some out. So as everybody's continuing on, the space that I'm talking about, which is the parking space that the dumpster's in, plus the finger planter to the north, approximately, and I'm just guessing at this based upon scale at the moment, is approximately 16 feet wide. I think there's plenty of room to get a 2-3 foot planter each side, plus have the dumpster and the equipment screened in the middle of that island. So I don't think we're down to minimum dimensions in any sense.
And your proposal would also include some double doors to be open to be able to access the dumpster, is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Bill, did you have some
actually
comments?
Want to continue. So for some reason, then, I might not be reading this right, Carl, just to clarify what you're seeing. I'm seeing the 2-foot, 4-inch clearance from the dumpster to the edge of the parking space.
What
sheet are you on? On sheet Z3. So on the, I'm seeing the 2-foot, 4 clearance from the dumpster to the edge of the parking space. But then I'm seeing what I'm understanding the dotted line around the equipment is the necessary sort of your own mini setback for accessibility. Am I right on that? Or am I not?
The dashed
line.
We take
that entire area. Take this entire area. Uh-huh. Right? Extend this curb down this way, curve it, so and come back down here, and you've got this whole area.
I see.
That you can put a dumpster
in. I see. Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, so in that case, my comment would be that a planter makes sense now that I'm seeing it. Now that I'm seeing it correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, along with a fence.
Okay. A wood fence.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's my recommendation.
It doesn't have to have a roof, but doors.
Correct.
All right. Do you have some comments, Bill?
My only comment would be it's nice to see us or have the opportunity to take advantage of an overall visual improvement for this.
Right. Okay. Well, I support what has been said also. So I think we're here for conceptual/preliminary. So should we continue with comments, perhaps, and ask you to come back with some idea for...
I think Carl's doing up a kind of a visual aid here right now.
Landscaping and fencing.
Yeah. And when do I need to get stuff back into?
So would someone like to make a motion to that effect?
I'll move for a continuance with the comments that the applicant study a solution screening both the dumpster and the equipment in some either block or wood fence solution with landscape screening outside of that to soften it. And I'm going to include, I don't know how we do this, because I've got a little graphic that I'm going to hand her so she understands which area we're talking about, because we're really going to lose, we're not losing a parking space because it's where the dumpster is at currently, but technically it's a parking space that we're going to lose and try to incorporate a screening area around the two items in question.
Okay.
And we can come back as soon as you want to.
Would you like that June 10th date?
I think I can do that.
Okay, so we'll add that to the motion, and do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Are you affiliated with Lee Rogers? Are you out of the same... office, Leo Rogers?
I work for Black Beach, and Leo works for Black Beach.
Okay, because it said that she filed the project on our report.
Yeah, she's north of Sacramento, they're in West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Let me just say, what you're trying to do conceptually, I'm really behind. I think the concept is really great because it does transfer the energy use from peak hours to off-use hours, so I think it's a great idea. So
yeah,
very much in support of the concept.
I'm thinking as a whole concept, it seems like it should be a good thing, but I can understand the questions on how can one little thing? I don't know if Tesla is undercutting some of the cost of the unit. I don't understand that exactly, how people on the work. Maybe I can get you more information on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're on now to item H, announcements by members.
I'd like to make a, not so much an announcement, but a question. We've had a certain amount of turnover in board members recently. We've got three new members of the board that have been with us for, at the most, maybe, a year to brand new. And I was wondering if it might not be time to ask city attorney for a refresher course on the Brown Act, just to bring our newer members of the board up to speed.
So I think, Mary, you would pose the question to Mr. Giles.
Yes, we can make that request, and whether there be an actual review process, in writing or.
Well, he had a great PowerPoint thing that he ran us through the first time.
Okay, we'll look into it.
Like a refresher kind of a thing.
Okay.
And I just had a question. At the last DRB meeting, when we had the Willow Springs Phase 3 project, there was a question that was raised that was kind of beyond the purview of the design review board, and there was a woman on staff that came in and made some comments, and I don't know who's ever been introduced to her and who that was.
That was our contract planner, Stephanie Diaz. She's been working on several projects, and she will likely be involved in that project.
How do you spell her last name?
D-I-A-Z.
D-I-A-Z.
Yes, okay. Stephanie Diaz.
Contract planner?
Yes.
Okay.
She did some research on the project, which is sort of why she jumped in.
Right. Okay, thank you. Any other announcements or comments?
Chair Wignett, I did have one announcement.
Please.
This is in regards to the city's street tree committee. They're going to be meeting, and I'm not sure what that date was.
The PTAC? Public Tree Advisory Committee?
Yeah, maybe that's what that is, Public Tree Advisory Committee. And they're going to be meeting sometime in June, and they're going to be looking at an approved list of street trees. Mm-hmm. So just want to ask those of you who have a particular interest or expertise to take a look at that, just to make sure that the city's doing a good job with that. One thing that I was looking at, they have kind of a list of what the appropriate trees are to be placed in these medians and alongside frontages. Additional criteria might be a tolerance to reclaim water for those opportunities when we do have reclaimed water, to include that as one of the criteria to look at in terms of the appropriateness of trees.
Right. Okay. Anything further? I think then we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
All right.